I'm James DeBacco.
And I'm Susie Hess. Our Stories Matter podcast was born out of a need for a brave space for people who experience the criminal punishment system to share their truths. This is Our Stories Matter, brought to you by Trauma Informed LA. Our Stories Matter celebrates the complex lived experiences of activists and healers by sharing their inspiring stories. In season 4 of Our Stories Matter, we will focus on two organizations that are dismantling the 46,000 collateral consequences, Homeboy Industries and Forestry and Fire Recruitment Program.
Welcome to Our Stories Matter. I'm your host, Susie Hess.
I'm co-host James DeBacco. Today's episode is with Brandon Smith.
Yo, yo.
Founder and director of the Forestry and Fire Recruitment Program. So, Brandon Smith. Brandon N. Smith is the co-founder and executive director of the Forestry and Fire Recruitment Program, also known as the FFRP. Brandon helped found FFRP to help individuals who are formerly incarcerated and worked in fire camps overcome the barriers that prevent them from entering the professional field of firefighting. Brandon, a husband and father, grew up in Altadena, California, and has a Bachelor of Arts in African American and Liberal Studies from the University of California, Berkeley. In 2008, Brandon was incarcerated at Wasco State Prison. Brandon was released in March 2014 after his sentence reduced because of his work on a fire crew. So welcome, Brandon. So opening up, we talked in the beginning just so briefly right before you walked in. Can you tell us about you and your founding of FFRP?
Yeah, and thank you for that elaborate introduction. No, but so basically for about 2.5 years at the end of my sentence, I ended up going to fire camp. For people who don't know, fire camp is within the state of California is where incarcerated people are used as firefighters because fires out here in the West are just getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. So while I was incarcerated at fire camp, I grew to love the work. I had had a previous background in like school and academics. And so being out in nature, fighting fires, it was something like really, really exciting to me. So I wanted to do it when I came home. And so when I came home, there were just a whole lot of barriers and challenges. This is before Ban the Box was put into place. And so I would go to different fire stations and ask about how can I be a firefighter. Folks would just look at me crazy like, dude, you just got out of prison. What you talking about? You want to be a firefighter. So it took me a long time to go transition into the work. But once I did, I realized that I wasn't the only person from fire camp. I wasn't the only formerly incarcerated person who wanted to continue doing this work, who wanted to still be a firefighter. And so that's where FFRP started from. Myself and my co-founder, Royal Ramey, we found one very unique pathway into firefighting. And it was this weird, long process. We had to go back to a fire academy. I had to go network, kiss ass to the fire chiefs. I had to become a volunteer firefighter. And then once they saw I could do all of that work, then they gave me an opportunity and I was in their circle. And so it was like, I went through all that process to become a professional firefighter. So many people are coming home and they don't have the process, the wherewithal to go do that because it was a very complicated process. And so we were like, let's just help folks out. Literally how it happened, I was on a wildfire in Big Bear, my first job working professionally, and I came across the former camp that I used to work for and work on. And everybody was just so surprised, like, Brandon, like, wow, you really did it. You really, really did it. So we started telling folks, hey, here's my number, here's my address, write me, hit me up when you come home, we'll go to Starbucks, I hope you with your resume, I hope you find different classes and just kind of put you in. And was slowly started from just us volunteering, helping out one or two, three different people in 2015. Gosh, now it's 2023 and it's a full-blown organization out here.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Amazing. And for the listeners who may not know what fire camps are, can you talk about the fire camps and maybe the laws? I know that they've changed out here in terms of if you were a firefighter inside and becoming one on the outside.
Right, right. So wildfires in the Western United States, including California, have been increasing in their frequency and their severity over the past 100 years. There are multiple reasons for that. I'm a personal believer that the world is getting hotter and drier. Mm-hmm. There is what they call a mismanagement of the forest. So, for example, I went to a school called John Muir High School, Mustangs. And when they talk about John Muir, they talk about John Muir on this horse just riding through the forest, right? And he can just see for miles and miles. Now, if you were to go to the forest like that, you couldn't see like 10 feet in front of you because the forest is just so overcrowded.
Wow.
And then there's just a lack of firefighters. There's a shortage of firefighters. So what the state of California decided to do in 1941, yes, that's how I remember it, World War II, they decided to utilize incarcerated people as firefighters, as manual labor throughout the state. And one of the first things that they did was make them firefighters. And so when you're in fire camp or incarcerated person who is a firefighter, you go through all the same trainings as everyone else. So you go to a fire academy. I went to a fire academy. I had to study. I had to pass. I had to go through the physical routine.
Which I heard is intense.
Yeah, and what type of a program do you study for that? I mean, in terms of what's the curriculum?
Yeah, so you're in class for a couple of months, and they teach you about how to use the tools. They teach you the components of fires. They teach you ways to put out fire, firefighter safety. They teach you about incident command. Firefighting is very, very militaristic. And then, you know, there's the practical trainings of like hopping in and out of fire engines, throwing out and hopping into fire shelters, how to actually use the tools, how to put stuff on fire, how to put stuff out, and all of that. So it was a very intense process for me. And so once I was finished, though, they sent me off to a fire camp. There are currently 35 different fire camps within the state of California. It used to be 43, but they just shut 8 down.
And in comparison with other states, is that a lot or not so much?
Oh, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Each fire camp can hold up to like 200 people at a time. And when you think about fire camp, a fire camp is basically a half, 50% a prison and 50% a fire station. And they merge together.
Mm.
And so they have all of these places in non-urban areas, rural areas. I always got a problem saying that word, rural areas. Mm-hmm. And basically, you can imagine it like a summer camp that's a prison, literally. It was one of the reasons why I went to fire camp. No barbed wires, no towers, white picket fences, you can see your family, open visiting, it's not behind
really?
A glass wall.
You can see you can see family if you're part of the fire camps.
Yeah, so and that was one of the reasons also, because when I was up in Wasco and then also when I was in Jamestown, you know, my family's in Southern California, so they were like, ooh, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to see you all the time. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to be able to drive 6-8 hours to come see you, but when I was in fire camp, I was just an hour away from my house.
Mm.
So my family would come every weekend and we would, and this is what's interesting. Like they would let them bring in outside food. So I would be like, I want some Taco Bell. I want some ribs. I want some McDonald's.
Yeah.
And we would come out or like we would barbecue there. I get to push my daughter on the swings. We can just all chill. So, it was an interesting experience. The food was 10 times better while being in fire camp, because when you're at fire camp, incarcerated people are making the food, but they're making the food for the lieutenants and the firefighters and the chiefs and all that kind of stuff and the COs. And so whatever they're making for them, we're eating the same thing.
When you say you're talking about correctional officers, correct?
Right. Correctional officers. Right. And so it was just an interesting experience, you know? Yeah. I mean, I learned to love it. You know, it wasn't overcrowded. I wasn't stuck in a cell.
You're talking about SEC, correct? On the 2-yard, or is that on the 1-yard?
It's on the 1-yard.
On the 1-yard.
It's on
so
the
that's
1-yard.
Almost like kind of like dorm. Is it dorm living up there?
Yeah, it's dorm living. Yeah, it's dorm living. So it's not in cells, but it's dorm living.
So with the men that you were housed with in fire camp, how many of those men do you still stay in contact with? And how many of those, you know, historical events that you've experienced has helped other formerly incarcerated persons come out to become professional firefighters?
Yeah, it's interesting. Some of my most valuable friends today, I met while incarcerated at fire camp. I still stay in contact with them today. Interestingly enough, my co-founder, Royal Ramey, he and I met at fire camp, and we became friends. And so we stayed in contact once we both paroled. I just talked to another one of my friends who just moved to New York, who we were in fire camp together for 2 years. So, you know, you make lasting bonds in there because, you know, you're in a dangerous situation and you're working on fires together. And, you know, you have that sense of camaraderie and adrenaline. And interestingly enough, though, you know, it was not similar as on One Yard, but what's interesting, though, is the prison politics that folks often deal with are reduced there. Not saying it's not there, but the tensions are extremely, extremely lower. You know, there is still like the racial dynamics that are there and rules are, you know, prison rules or prison rules that right. folks follow. And or is just like less as aggressive.
Interesting. So can you talk, I have two thoughts. Can you talk one about the laws in California versus other states?
Because I forgot about that.
No, that's okay. We just went off in a million places, which I love. But and so the laws out here of becoming a firefighter, if you're incarcerated, and I saw the program on Forestry and Fire on CNN that talked about a third of firefighters were formerly incarcerated.
Right.
So yeah, I was just super overwhelmed to hear that. And then to hear when they came home, they couldn't be firefighters.
Right, it don't make sense.
No.
I was good enough to do it when I was locked up, but I can't do it when I come home.
Right. Like what the fuck was that?
that's backwards.
But is that... So my question is, did those laws change in the state of California where now you can become a firefighter if you were formerly incarcerated, or you have to be part of those fire camps to be a firefighter?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I remember somebody telling me one time, they're like, damn, so like, are you telling me I got to be incarcerated to go be a firefighter out here? It's like, well, I don't know. But yeah, so when I came home in 2014, there were some laws and challenges, you know. One of the things, how do I counter this? So one of the things is just being incarcerated, you have a record, right? You have a background. And when you think of firefighters, you think of like the ultimate public servants, right? They're the people that get the cats out the trees, right? Mm-hmm. Some people can hate police officers. They can even hate teachers, but nobody hates the firefighters, right?
Right.
And so there was there's a public stigma, right? A lot of folks are like, you're tainting the profession. And then also a lot of things that happened was when I would apply to some of these agencies and maybe they may take a look at it when they, you know, do a background check on me, it's like, oh, whoa, you know, there's no way that you're going to be able to do this. How are you going to work for the federal government with this record, right? Mm-hmm. There were also like the challenges of just normal reentering into society. And so a couple of things started to change. One is, you know, starting off with like the Ban the Box initiative, employers can't ask your criminal history status on the application. Secondly, Governor Newsom signed into law a bill called AB 2147. That's been around for about 2 or 3 years now. Mm-hmm. And what that law allows is anybody who finished from fire camp, the charge that sent you to fire camp can be expunged.
Oh.
Wait, the charge can be expunged if you complete fire camp or if you're selected for fire camp?
If once selected and once you complete your term in fire camp, the charge that sent you to fire camp will then be expunged.
Oh, wait, this is so interesting. Yeah. I had no idea.
That's an incentive.
That's right. an amazing incentive. Yeah.
Right. And so one of the things that you find, well, there's some challenges with that law, but one of the challenges with the law is the fact that because people in fire camp are what you consider like the low level offenders, right? The folks on the One Yard and all that kind of stuff. Most of the time, those people probably shouldn't have been in prison in the first place. Substance abuse issues, petty theft, mental challenges, and just, you know, violating a suspended sentence, you know, your PO violates you, stuff like that. So one of the things that you find, though, is that, sadly, is the people that recidivize more often are the low-level offenders because those challenges are never mitigated. So what you'll find is people that have been in fire camp 2, 3, 4, 5 different times. So even though you expunge one of my crimes, I don't think it's retroactive. I've got to look into it. Or you may have had a charge where one time you didn't go to fire camp. Those charges, most of the times, are not expunged.
You know, that's an interesting point because now you have me wondering whether or not if you're released from fire camp because you've completed your sentence and then you violate and you go back, do you automatically go back to fire camp?
No, you go back through the same intake process as everybody. So, you know, you go to reception, they have to recalculate your points, figure out how much time you have and all that kind of stuff. And you go through the whole process again. So, the training piece at SEC and all of that. So like the whole, yeah, you go through it every time that
you. Whoa. Okay, can I get some clarity can you talk about the difference between the yards? Because you're talking about, like, if you're in 1 yard, you can be eligible, but maybe if you're in 4, not. Like, can you tell the listeners what the difference is?
Right. So, the CDCR classifies incarcerated people based on some bootleg algorithm that calculates risk. So, you know, questions like how old were you when you first, you know, had an offense? How much time do you have? How violent or serious is your crime? Are there social challenges that prevent you from being around certain groups of people? All this kind of stuff. And then once that happens, they give you a score. They rank you. It's just like, how many points do you have, right?
Yeah, you're talking about the compass system, right?
The compass system, right? Yeah, the classification score number, right? And so based on those numbers, they rank you, right? And so they have level 1s through level 4s, I believe.
Yeah.
Right. Level 4 being like the most severe. I'm using quotations right here.
Yeah.
Right. And then 1 being the least. To put things in perspective, like somebody who's in prison for substance abuse challenges are probably going to be what they consider like level 1, whereas like, I don't want to bring something sensitive, but like people on like death row or like lifers, most of the time they're like a Marilyn Manson or something. Like those are what you would consider like level 4s. And so when you go to these prisons and these institutions, they house you and separate you based on these classification systems. And so when I was in fire camp, the level of groups that were eligible, what they deemed low-level offenders, were the level 1s, were the people on the 1 yards. Now, since then, that is kind of, I don't want to say it's changed, but the classification system has changed as well. So some people who used to be level 2s or level 3s, you know, get bumped down, or if you in for like 10 years with good behavior, your points start to go down. And so there is some shifting around there.
So they do some modifications and revisions of the point system so that the men and women, I presume, right? Or do they have women firefighters as well?
Let's not forget, they have women out there as well. There are currently 2 women fire camps. There used to be 3, but one of them closed.
Wow.
So there's one in Malibu, it's actually called Malibu, and the other one is Puerto La Cruz in the San Diego area. The one thing I do want to mention is the fact of to this day, they actually use young adults and juveniles as firefighters out there.
What?
Yeah. So at one point in time, there were about 5 or 6 fire camps for folks that were in YA. And now there's one. Yeah. It's called Pine Grove.
Well, for the listeners, talk about the YA fire, experience, because it's up to age 25. Is that correct?
Yes.
So
yes.
When you're talking about youth offenders and you're talking about YA, you know, you're looking at actually adults who are actually in youth authority prisons.
Oh.
Yeah. No. Yes. And both. Yes and both.
So they're using teenagers.
They're using 16, 17-year-olds. You know what I'm saying? And it's so crazy because I was talking to somebody. I was like, they would rather put these folks in dangerous situations than help them get a GED.
Right.
Right.
You right.
Know. Now, what about parental approval? Is that required? If they're under the age of 18, you would think they would need parental approval to be, you know, a part of the, you know, the fire recruitment program.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm not sure all the details because they started to phase it out because of the political outroar that.
I would imagine
Yes. All right, so I have so many thoughts and so many questions.
I have to go back to one of your questions, though, about the legal, the policies.
The policies.
Another law, I think it's SB 271 or something. Governor Newsom just passed it recently. It's another expungement type law where it says, once released, if you stay out of criminal activity, if you stay out of the courts for 4 years, your entire record gets expunged. Now,
if you're a firefighter or just anyone, okay,
anyone now. So, it's SB 270 something. Somebody can look.
I mean, James.
Well, I mean, I'm going on four. It's 4 years for me in April, so we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see how that goes.
You know, one of the things about these laws, though, is like all of these politicians create these laws, and nobody knows how they're actually going to be implemented, or nobody knows the impact. So a lot of it is just like words, right?
Yeah, right.
But you know, I do appreciate Governor Newsom for going out there and saying publicly that formerly incarcerated people do deserve to go be firefighters in this space,
mm-hmm.
right? So, and he did give a directive to Cal Fire, the state fire department. Mm-hmm. He gave them a directive saying, in entry-level fire positions that don't require tough security clearances, don't background check anybody. So that's an interesting thing mm-hmm. as well. You can go work for the state of California as a firefighter,
mm-hmm.
and as long as it's like not a fire captain, or as long as you're not going back to like a fire camp to watch them, you can go be a firefighter without a background check. That's one directive that he actually gave them.
So you can be a firefighter in the state of California if you're not a high-ranking firefighter? Is that what you're saying?
Well, the entry-level positions will not require a background check.
Oh.
Now, once you get to a point where you got to do a background check, I don't know what that looks like yet. I don't think anybody knows what that looks like yet.
Yeah.
But there is an opportunity. And it's still extremely hard to become a firefighter in California. I mean, because there are just multiple stigmas. People have a hard way of transitioning. Like, we used to consider you a public nuisance to 180 degrees of being like the ultimate public servant.
You know, you were talking about, you know, being a firefighter in California with formerly incarcerated. What I'm curious is, does that extend just to wildland firefighters, or does that also extend to city and county jurisdictions as well?
Interesting point. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. This only applies in the wildland firefighting space. Mm-hmm. Now, just to explain, there are basically two types of firefighters. There are wildland firefighters who work on wildfires or vegetation fires, fires on the side of the freeway, fires in the mountains, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have structural firefighters or municipal firefighters. And those are the folks that like climb the ladders and backdraft and like,
right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, they go into buildings and stuff like that. Now,
right.
We're trained to go do that as well, but we do that in wildland spaces. We don't work in cities. That requires a little bit additional training. Most of the times, also, you got to be an EMT. Formerly incarcerated people still have challenges getting their EMT license. And then there's also still that stigma of, like, I don't want you to ruin the public's perception of me. So, for example, I can go be a firefighter in the Angeles National Forest.
Mm-hmm.
So out there, you know, in the mountains of Los Angeles, yet the LA County Fire Department has already told me that they won't, as it stands now, mm-hmm. they won't hire me to be a firefighter. So is LA City, right? So like counties and cities.
Well, so you're saying you can go and be a firefighter with BLM,
right?
Which is Bureau of Land Management,
mm-hmm.
but you cannot become a firefighter for a municipality like Los Angeles County Fire Department or LA City Fire Department.
No, You cannot.
Even though the entry-level position of a FFRP is going to be the same type of position, whether it's municipal or whether it's rural type of firefighting.
Right. That is correct. Now, we at FFRP, I don't know. I'm going to say who we're working with, but we are working with somebody within Los Angeles County to kind of test the waters and see what that looks like, especially with the expungement process, because there's a theory here that we have that we're going to test out. And FFRP operates by just testing out theories, and if it works, it works. If it don't, we talk shit and we bang on people. Oh, no, well.
Just keep it real. Keep it real.
You know, we cause a ruckus or whatever. So one of the people in Los Angeles County Fire who we're talking with is like, theoretically, if there is somebody who's only been to prison one time, gets an expungement, theoretically, then their record is clear.
Yeah.
And then they should be able to go get a job with the municipality.
Yeah, they should be able to.
Because their record is clear.
Right.
You know? But we don't know if that works yet or not.
Right. Because the background, what would the background reveal? I mean, if the record is sealed or cleared or expunged, where's the threat?
Right.
Where's the threat?
And I'm curious about how you and your co-founder founded FFRP. Like, how did this path happen for you?
Yeah, well, once we ran back into our old fire camp and, you know, we started helping people out when they came home. It started to be like one person, two people, three people. It's interesting, the correctional officers and the lieutenant gave us a call and they asked us to go back to the camp. So they were like, hey, can you all come back to the camp and do a presentation for us one day? And so, interestingly enough, he gave us a special clearance at the time. I remember we were in the chow hall. That's the lunch hall, the dinner hall slash auditorium in most situations. Everybody from fire camp was there. And the first question we asked was, raise your hand if you want to be a firefighter when you come home.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the 150 people there, about 145 all rose their hands. And we like, damn.
Whoa.
Oh, we got to do something about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we started coming back to the camps more often. We started holding workshops at the camps, helping folks out, giving them resume templates, let them know who to talk to once they came home, finding different fire academies that they had to go to. Because what's interesting is, even though I went through a fire academy while I was incarcerated, none of my certificates were valid when I came home.
Wait.
Wow.
Can I just stop? So your certifications inside were not valid when you came home?
No.
Why?
Because they have SCC on them.
They have the prison monograms, and prison names, signed by the warden.
Exactly.
So there's the stigma again.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Wow.
And then again, a lot of people didn't understand what was going on behind the walls in fire camp. So they're like, no, that certification only works for you to go to fire camp. That's not a real certification. But it's like, dude, yes, it is. So when I got home, I had to go back to a fire academy all over to get the same
certifications.
Yeah.
This is intense. And I heard from Benjamin from FFRP.
Oh, yeah.
So he was telling us about just the intensity of that training that just doesn't even seem human, number one. And now you have to go through it again when you come home?
Yeah, right, you said it's military-esque.
Yeah, it's definitely military. It's a paramilitaristic society in fire, like, period. Yeah, you was talking to Fowler. You got to do it all over again. That's one of the reasons why we started FFRP, because it's like, now FFRP is our own certification agency. We're certified to give out fire certs. So we act as the fire academy. So when we started FFRP, it was just me, Royal, and a group of volunteers. It was like, hey, bro, we helped you out. We need you to come to camps with us and help out. And, like, we just kept helping people out. Then folks from other camps heard about what was going on, and they were like, hey, can you come to my camp? Can you come to my camp? Can you come to my camp? And so we started doing that. And then in 2000 and – so that was from 2015 and, like, 2017. So we were still working as firefighters. I was with the Forest Service. My co-founder Royal was with Cal Fire, and so we were still working as volunteers. And then one day he and I talked, and it was like, man, this is getting too big. because now folks are calling us all the time. Like, we have no free time. And it's like,
wow,
do we keep doing fires or do we do this? And so what we ended up doing was applying to a grant from the state of California. And they ended up giving us a significant amount of money to kind of test out the concept. Mm. And so,
well, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he and I ended up leaving our jobs temporarily. And then it just grew and grew and grew and grew. Then CDCR found out about it. We ended up meeting former Secretary Ralph Diaz. He hooked us up and we started like meeting with the folks. They gave us like they gave us gate passes for all the fire camps and SCC and CIW. And so we started going there all the time and folks started mailing us and we was doing presentations and we started getting more grants and more grants and more grants and more grants.
Wow.
And it just turned out to be like the full-fledged thing. So
amazing.
Beyond our own fire crew that we have, we haven't been back yet.
You know, that's interesting how you talk about how the Department of Corrections approached you. Mm-hmm. You know, and that just brings me to the question about employment. Mm-hmm. Do you see employment as being political, even with the fact that the Department of Corrections approached you, FFRP, and said, hey, you know, we want to test the waters with you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see employment as one of the biggest pillars for people to successfully reenter into society.
Yeah.
And I believe that the Department of Corrections believes that as well. Now, what actions they take to do that, that's different. But I think morally, you know, they believe in that, you know, that employment is that, you know, if somebody has a steady job, some money, some food on their back, a career that they love, they're not trying to be in the streets or they're not trying to do whatever to go back to prison. And so employment is one of the biggest ways for like people not to reenter society. I think one of the challenges that we just have in correctional systems all around is you know, the concept of
what's the word?
Rehabilitation.
Mm.
You know, people it's prison is still more punitive than rehabilitative, you know? And so what you'll find is like, I remember when I was doing research in the FFRP, I remember this one prison and it's in another state or something. And they were training women and men to be in cosmetology and to be barbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the Department of Corrections is like, oh, look at all of them. They got all these certifications or whatever. But then when they come home, the licensing board won't license them. So it's like, why were you doing all of that?
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, in California was really big. Now is coding. There's a lot of people doing like technical coding or training people in coding. And what's interesting, though, is you can train the folks for that, but you need programs like FFRP or you need to create systems for folks to use those skills and experience. Because what good is it to have these skills when you can't do anything with them when you come home?
Right.
Right?
That makes sense.
So, like, that's what we need is we need organizations. We need people. We, you know, what's interesting in these systems, in these institutions, you know, folks just got ideas and they throw out a plan. And I don't think folks think A to Z. Right? How everything is going to play out at the end.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm a firm believer that any skills or traits that you gain while incarcerated, you should be able to utilize once you come home.
100%. Because I also think when you were talking about the yards, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that someone on 4 yard, which was James,
yep,
wouldn't be eligible to be a firefighter.
Right. Right. Right.
Even though and that's a good point, Susie, because let's assume, you know, that somebody's been on a level 4 yard, has been in no disciplinary, mm-hmm, you know, trouble, no, has received no administrative or serious rule violation reports for over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they not be able to qualify or at least submit their application for the, you know, the FFRP?
Now, at FFRP, we don't discriminate.
Okay. So, or even on, let's assume even within the Department of Corrections, but then after you get out,
okay,
right? Because this is another question I was wondering. If, let's say you didn't go through the fire program in the Department of Corrections, but you're formally incarcerated, and let's say you're on parole.
Okay.
Would FFRP be willing to look at somebody who's on parole?
Like you.
Yeah. Like me, who say, you know what? I think I like to try that. You know?
Yes. Yes,
we do. That's awesome.
And we have.
That's amazing.
Yeah. We have.
Good.
Because that's awesome. One of the things that we do. Our mutual friend, Dr. Jenna Reimer, one of the things that she helps us out with is once you come home, we get in contact with your PO. You know what I'm saying? Oh, and we say that.
So you build that connection then.
Right. We build a connection with them. Because one of the challenges, too, that people, one of the regulatory challenges about firefighting as well is when you're a firefighter, you need to be able to respond all throughout the state of California, right? Mm. And so if I'm on parole and I got a 50-mile radius, right. You're telling me I can only go fight a fire in L.A. County.
Right.
That ain't going to work.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And then we were having challenges where POs who were assholes were like, oh, I'm only if I give you a gate pass, you got to check in with me every single day. And it's like, dude, I'm in the boonies with no service.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. No Wi-Fi.
Right. No, nothing. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? And then so if I'm on parole and you want my captain who don't know nothing about incarceration to call you every day and check in with you to let you know that I'm here. There ain't no captain about to go through that. So that's what we deal with FFRP. So there's also a advocacy thing as well. So we've talked to DAPO, adult parole. We've done meetings and Zooms and with them around this is what FFRP is. These are the challenges that people face when they want to become firefighters. What do you do?
So they're very receptive to it then.
They are now.
Yeah, but it was very, talk about those challenges in the beginning. What was that like?
Yeah.
Oh, there were a lot of challenges in the beginning. You know, things just pop up and it's just like barriers, right? Just like how we were talking about the parole officer thing. There's also challenges people don't have driver's license, health insurance, mm-hmm. Mental health support.
Mm-hmm.
People come home, still have legal challenges or restitution. Mm-hmm. I remember somebody saying that they're on parole for 3 years. I'm like, what? You on parole for 3 years?
Mm-hmm.
What the hell? But they want to go do this work, right? So one of the things we had to do was and CDCR did help us with this though. But one of the things that we had to say was that if we have a group of folks in this program in the area, I need one PO for all of them, right? Just somebody I can do, just a couple of people, put them all together so that I can go work with this one person and we can go figure out ways to help them out. Also, one of the things that happens with AB 2147, and in some situations, folks are getting off parole earlier now. I'm seeing a lot of folks getting off parole in 6 months or a year. In the past 2 years, what we've seen is people who are on probation or parole in our program, mm-hmm. as soon as they graduate and they get a job offer, we go back to their POs hey, look, bro, you got to do something about this. And at first they're like, well, do you want me just to transfer you to the other county? No, get this dude off. Get this woman off.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And they've been receptive of that as of lately. Because one of the biggest things is there's been a narrative change about this for the past 5 years. When I came home, a lot of people were like, fire camp, what? What? They use incarcerated people as firefighters? A lot of people, if you weren't in the circle, you didn't know about this. You know what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying?
Right.
And so now there's a lot of hoopla about it. A lot of people are talking about it now.
Well, there used to be a stigma associated, a really deep stigma, because the public didn't really want to know who was actually going up in the hills and protecting their homes. And they sure in hell didn't want to know that it was a former incarcerated or an incarcerated person.
Yep. At one point in time, when I got out in 2014, there were 9,000 people. There were 9,000 incarcerated people going through the fire camp system every year. 9,000. So that made up a third of California's firefighting force.
Incredible.
And, right? And so you got all these people saying, I don't want formerly incarcerated people. What? They're going to steal my TV. They're going to steal my rings. It's like, lady, ma'am, don't you know these people have been protecting your homes for almost the past decade, for 80 years?
And I've been having a flashback to the Malibu fires where, mm-hmm. The FFRP and probably the wildland firefighters from the Department of Corrections were a huge, huge, mm-hmm. Component in keeping that from spreading further inland.
Right, exactly, exactly. Keeping people away, keeping the property damage away.
Right.
You know?
This is super interesting because so then it sounds like FFRP did a lot of advocacy around we need to change the whole process about parole? Because if you're in a fire, if you're fighting a fire, and for listeners who don't know, if your parole officer calls you and says, you need to meet me in 5 minutes,
right,
you have to get in your car no matter where you are. You better not be out of a 50-mile radius. And now you have to get out of the fire in the forest and go find your parole officer?
Right, right, right.
Yeah. I mean, so is that accurate that FFRP advocated to stop that madness?
We are one of the entities that did, yes, and still do. You know, we just advocate for the challenges that formerly incarcerated people face, that justice impacted people face, you know. You know, like you mentioned before, like if you know, you are a lifer come from a four yard and you didn't get a chance to go to fire camp, but you want to still do this, like, hey, you can come to us. You know what I'm saying?
That's awesome. So all my clients.
Yeah. Because we don't discriminate. And our goal is that, like, if you, and you are here to better your life, we are here to help you improve yours as well. Ooh, excuse me. We are here to help you out as well, to better your life, however you want, whatever resources that you need. And a lot of people still to this day, you know, throw justice impacted people away, formerly incarcerated people away. They still think of us as public nuisances. But, you know, FFRP's purpose is to say that, like, formerly incarcerated people are people, right? They're people first. And people need these resources. People need help. I'm here for everybody to thrive in life. And that's what FFRP is here. If there's a problem or a challenge, best believe we're going to say something about it.
I like how you said that. People first.
People first.
Well, you know, Brandon, it's been an amazing opportunity to have you here.
I really appreciate it.
And share with us your story about your personal story, your challenges, and the struggles with trying to develop FFRP and the successes. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, having said that, you know, what has it been like to tell your story today?
I mean, this is a cool setup. I mean, I really appreciate the invitation. Thank you all for having me.
We got the Tila Tech team right here.
The Tila Tech team. Shout out to Tila Tech. Woo, woo.
Yes.
All women.
Women's History Month, baby.
That's right.
That's one of the things we're working on next is the all-women firefighter crew.
Wow.
We'll put more on that later.
Oh, we should do a sequel. Well,
yeah, we'll bring them. Yeah, we'll do a sequel.
We'll do a sequel.
Yeah.
I like that.
Okay, and then my final before goodbye, I mean, I know I could sit here all day with you, but my final thought is if listeners, anyone who wants to get involved to support FFRP, what can they do? How do they find you?
Yeah, so we got a website, forestryfirerp.org. That's forestryfirerp.org. We're on all the social medias. Just reach out. We're looking for advocates to stand with us. We're looking for justice impacted people that want to be firefighters or that want to help. You know, with lawyers, legal aid, mental health, substance abuse, anybody that want to help, come to the table. Whatever you got, we here.
People first, right?
People first.
Right. Because FFRP don't do this work in a silo. It takes all of us. We build community. That's what this is about.
People first. I love that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for sharing your heartbeat.
Awesome.
I love who you are.
Thank you.
Good people.
Yeah.
Our Stories Matter is brought to you by Trauma Informed Los Angeles. We want to thank Homeboy Industries and the Forestry and Fire Recruitment Program for sharing their experiences and opening their doors and hearts to us. Thank you also to Fabian Deborah for allowing us to record at Homeboy's Art Academy. Thank you also to the University of Southern California Good Neighbors. And thank you to Yehuda Price for composing our original music while incarcerated. Thank you, Ivan Reyes, our amazing editor. Please consider giving us a review with a 5-star shout out. Subscribe to Our Stories Matter wherever you get your podcasts. Join our trauma-informed Los Angeles community at traumainformedla.org. Please go to our website to read the full bios and credits. Join us next week and stay tuned for more Our Stories Matter.
We would like to take a moment to acknowledge the original stewards of the land where our event takes place today. Trauma Informed Los Angeles acknowledges the Gabrielino Tongva people as the traditional land caretakers of the Tavangar, which today is the Los Angeles Basin and Channel Islands. We are committed to uplifting the names and community members of these lands and across the nation who reside alongside us. We also want to acknowledge the suffering and forced unpaid labor of enslaved Africans and African Americans, which enabled the start of this country.